Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, welcome back in. It is Jake and Stacy. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers here. And we have a lot to talk about with Jamal Adams. Before I get to any of that, though, I have a fun announcement for you guys. We are doing a little contest. So during Four Down Territory, every day this week, you guys are going to have a chance to listen for a code word. When you hear the code word, we will prompt you with where you go to enter the code word. And it is a chance to win what, Jake?
It is a chance to win a $250 Visa gift card.
What?
Thank you. Yes, Curtis. Yes. Thanks to our friends at Genuine Auto Glass. So shout out to Genuine Auto Glass for this contest. And paying attention at the noon hour.
So it's a $250 Visa card to spend on anything?
To spend on anything your heart desires.
Wow.
Yeah, they didn't pigeonhole
diamonds,
you.
Diamonds and rubies.
That's right.
Sapphires.
Well, okay, I easy, guys. I don't
you can
know
go
if
to Morocco.
Sure. I mean, you could throw $250 into that.
Right?
Yeah.
You can still build toward it. Well, anyways, that chance for you coming up during Four Down Territory. So don't forget to listen very carefully. And don't worry. We'll make it very clear. We'll even spell it out, tell you where to go and everything. And if you have questions afterward, you can always text us 710-710 on the Mac and Jack's text line. All right. So let's get started with this story here. Jamal Adams is in need of a new contract, and he's playing in the final year of his deal. It's a fifth-year option that the Jets picked up, about $9.8 million. Obviously, he's going to be looking to get paid a lot more than that. The Seahawks have mandatory minicamp starting tomorrow, and let me just remind you that we will have feet on the ground, eyes on the field. I did it right that time. Jake Heaps will be there tomorrow and Wednesday at Seahawks mandatory minicamp. Quick poll for the three of us. Are we expecting Jamal Adams to be there? Yay or nay? I am.
Yay. Now, participating in practice? Nay. But I believe he will be there.
Okay. Curtis, do you think he'll be there?
Oh.
I think
he'll,
not so optimistic.
He'll be there, but in a limited capacity.
All right. Well,
I mean, why would you take on like an $80,000 fine? I mean,
yeah.
You'd be doing that for no reason.
Because you're about to win a $250 Visa gift card from Genuine Auto Glass.
Yeah, Jamal Adams is going to be sitting there at the noon hour waiting for the code word.
I got fines to pay.
$250 closer to paying this
fine. One at a time. He's listening in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, just trying to rack up enough. Finally, I can afford to skip minicamp. Thanks, Jake and Stacey.
You're welcome. Anything we can do to help.
Jake, you said that this was the hardest negotiation in Pete and John's time with Seattle. Why?
Why? Because when you look at the breakdown of where this contract is at, Stacy, it is legitimately in a crossroads with just the oddity of how the NFL works and functions to begin with. When you talk about their cap space, they already capped their league. Then you talk about the unspoken rules about the way that they put a market price on each individual position group. It's not, there's no rule in the rule book, Stacy, in the NFL where you have to pay a receiver, you know, $20 million, where a quarterback has to be paid, you know, $40 million, yep, where an offensive lineman has to be paid $10 million. There's no rule in terms of why these position groups are given the contracts that they are given, but the league and GMs across the board have these arbitrary numbers and these arbitrary values to each position group. So when it comes to this conversation with Jamal Adams, he's a strong safety. Strong safeties get paid a certain amount of money. We've been through this before. Buda Baker, as a strong safety, is the highest contract for strong safeties in the NFL right now. His is around, you know, 14 mil plus, close to 15, pushing to 15. Justin Simmons is a free safety. He is the highest overall safety contract in the NFL. Denver Broncos, his contract is over $15.5 million. So if you look at those arbitrary numbers, that is the top of the market for the safeties. And Jamal Adams, in a normal situation, normal circumstances, would just be hoping to get just a tick above that. But Jamal Adams is saying, look, I'm not an ordinary safety. Mm-hmm. I'm a dynamic weapon. I'm a guy that can get sacks. I can be a dominant run defender. And, you know, he would tell you, I think numbers would show differently, that I can also do a great job in coverage as well. I think we've seen last year that there were times that he struggled. That's an area that he can improve. But I do believe in this scheme and in this system, in year two, he can be a much improved coverage guy in this system at the strong safety position. So he views himself as somebody that can do it all. Therefore, he wants to be paid as one of the best defenders in the NFL and not by this arbitrary number, Stacey, for a safety. And he wants to get paid anywhere from $18 to $20 million, which, as I told you, the numbers would far exceed what the highest contract is for that position. The NFL doesn't like that. The Seattle Seahawks don't like that, don't operate within that type of thinking. They don't like to blow the market. They don't like to be in those positions. But yet, here they are with Jamal Adams, and I don't think they have a choice in this matter. This, by far, is the number one reason why Jamal Adams' contract negotiation is the hardest negotiation in the Pete Carroll and John Schneider era. Not even close.
And if you're wondering, well, how are negotiations going? Thankfully, we had ESPN's Brady Henderson on with us on Friday, and this is what he had to say.
So from what I understand, I checked on this a week or so ago, and I was told that they have had the Seahawks and Jamal Adams' agent, Kevin Connor, have had some initial negotiations. As of when I checked on this a week or so ago, there had not been a ton of progress made, but there is still optimism in the organization that they're going to get a deal done.
Now, the Seahawks situation with Jamal Adams, to me, highlights a bigger issue with the NFL as a whole, and that is that sometimes you just don't pay a player what he's worth. You can't pay him what he's worth, either because of the salary cap that each team has to fit under, or because this kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge agreement between GMs and owners that, hey, you're not going to pay your strong safety $20 million, right? Because then I have to pay my great strong safety $20 million. So let's all agree that we're going to artificially cap these salaries within a certain amount of where they are right now. Joel Corey of CBS Sports wrote about this. He's going to be joining us at 1 p.m. today. And he pointed to Bobby Wagner as another example, specifically with Seattle, but in general of a player who wasn't really paid what he was worth at the time because of his position. Now, if there was no salary cap and any team could lure a player away with however much money they wanted, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, those guys would be getting paid ridiculous sums of money, but it would be because a team was in dire need of their services. So instead, the linebacker value is going to be capped lower than, say, a premier edge rusher just because of the history of how that position's been played. And Joel Corey says, you know, it's interesting because at the time, you could have pointed to Bobby Wagner and Aaron Donald as the two best defensive players in the sport with a drastic difference in their income. And that's just because of the position that Bobby plays. I think that's the situation that Jamal Adams is going to be into. It's not a new take. We've all been talking about it. But it is an interesting one because in real life, that would be illegal. Companies do it all the time, right? Like in Silicon Valley and anywhere, like you just decide that like, hey, you know, you're ideally not going to pay someone in this position too much money because then, you know, other companies will. So it happens like, I think, under the radar. In theory, though, it is illegal to price fix and to change those salaries. But that's what Jamal Adams is facing. He's facing a market where a strong safety is not financially going to be paid as much as a free safety, who is not going to be paid as much as a corner, and who is not going to be paid as much, unless you're Jalen Ramsey, as a premier edge rusher. And Joel Corey says maybe it would be in Adams' best interest to kind of to push for cornerback money as opposed to, you know, what Nick Bosa is going to want, like that top defensive end money.
No question. He is not going to get that type of money. I mean, 20 mil plus, no way. 18 to 20, I think, is definitely within the realm of possibility. And the likely number to me is going to be $18 million. Now, the hard part in all of this, in normal negotiations, having somebody that has grown up within your program and you have these battles, you have these negotiations, it's easier to play hardball. You know what makes it really difficult for the Seahawks to play hardball in this situation?
What's that?
Is all of the capital that they gave up to trade this guy.
Yes.
The moment you traded two first-round picks plus, because it was more than just the two first round picks. The moment you did that, you also had to take in all of the other factors and considerations involved. When you made the trade, there was already noise and conversation about Jamal Adams wanting to have a massive payday. There was already a point where as you gave that capital away, that you knew that you couldn't let Jamal Adams walk. If they let Jamal Adams walk because they just can't agree on a number here, this would go down as the worst trade, not even close. That you can't even bring up Jimmy Graham. It would go down as the worst trade.
I think that's the best trade
in
Seahawks
history. This team has ever made.
It by far, it would be. With everything that they gave up and the fact that they were not able to come and agree on a number. That, to me, is a big problem that they face. So, therefore, Jamal Adams holds a lot of the cards in this situation. Jamal Adams holds a lot of leverage in the situation to the point where even though the Seahawks, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, they have been, and Matt Thomas, they've been really good. They're capologists, really good at negotiating deals and have played hardball with a lot of these guys and been successful at it. I don't think that they can afford to do that this time around, given all of the factors. And that's why I think that this contract is absolutely going to be at $18 million. I don't think it can be anything less.
Well, and how much of a sticking point do we think it's going to be for them that they not surpass Wagner's salary? Because I think it is more than I'm giving it credit for. Not because of like pettiness on the part of a player, but I just think that it does make it a little awkward. It makes it tricky for future negotiations.
It's a business, and I think Bobby understands that. I also think that when you're looking at Jamal Adams, to me, this, I don't think you can compare the two contracts. I don't think Bobby's going to look at Jamal getting paid more than him and say, I'm not happy, I want a new deal. It's just not the way it's going to work. So I wouldn't worry too much about that upsetting Bobby Wagner. But I think that they're in a position where that's going to be the price point. And when they made that trade, I want to reiterate, when they made that trade, it was because they felt like they needed a fire starter. They needed a dynamic leader on defense, somebody to bring back some of the swagger to your defense again, be an enforcer, also while having the ability to be a dynamic pass rusher, a dynamic blitzing safety that racked up 9.5 sacks while missing 4 games. So I think that when you're looking at this, if you're Pete Carroll, you believe when you made that trade that this player is worth it. Other people can argue whether they agree or disagree, but this organization thinks that this player is worth it. That's why they made the trade. And to come back later and play hardball with this contract, I think would be a tough position to be in. So this is why this is going to be the most difficult, hardest negotiation that Pete Carroll and John Schneider have had in this era of Seahawks football.
Getting back to this at 1 p.m. with Joel Corey of CBS Sports. Before that, let's go ahead and get to headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headlines.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
M's get the win in the series finale yesterday, but not without some bad news. Mitch Haniger, no longer able to avoid the injury bug, fouled a ball off his knee in Sunday's first inning, had to leave the game.
Okay.
How are we rewriting this headline?
What about better your knee than your...
Stacy.
It could be a lot worse than that.
Coming in hot on a Monday.
Overall, it's good news. I mean, day to day, it's a knee contusion. X-rays were negative. This could have been a lot worse. Mitch Haniger has been their best offensive player. I know J.P. Crawford, I'm going to give him a lot of credit for the last month of play, but this could have been a lot worse for them.
Oh, Stacy, just making me cringe today.
I know. I didn't mean to. It's just the truth.
Why do we have to talk about...
Said what I said.
That's no joke.
That's going to follow that guy around forever.
Forever and ever.
It will. I mean, much like it did to our good friend Paul Moyer, who comes on and still talks about it sometimes.
Maybe too much he talks about it. He's like proud of the fact.
Well, because he I don't know how you have that injury and then you tough it out. Like, that to me is, if I'm Paul Moyer, I am bragging about that all the time. I mean, that's a different level of toughness.
Headlines.
Logan Gilbert turning in the best start of his young major league career in Sunday's 6-2 win over Cleveland, going six strong innings. How are we rewriting this headline?
Man, I didn't really have anything else here other than just Jerry DePoto lets out a long exhale. You already had to send Jared Kelnick back down to the minors. Very normal, but certainly an anticlimactic end to that first stretch that he had for you. So the fact that Logan Gilbert was able to slowly improve in basically each of his last several outings and then ending most recently with this one, fantastic news for the Mariners.
It's great news for the Mariners. When you talk about the dramatic improvement that we have witnessed with Logan Gilbert from his first start to this last start yesterday, it's fantastic. And when you talk about two players that hold the key to my confidence in Jerry DePoto's ability to evaluate talent and the ability to actually make this rebuild a success, Jared Kelnick, Logan Gilbert. And we've seen those two guys up so far. Jared Kelnick, I'm not hitting the panic button, but it wasn't necessarily a success. I don't think anybody can deem that you know, entry into the bigs was a success for him right out of the gate. We'll see what it looks like coming out of the All-Star break. But Logan Gilbert, on the other hand, does make you optimistic. Why? Because also Jerry DePoto spent three drafts in a row selecting first-round college pitchers, Logan Gilbert being the first.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can evaluate Logan Gilbert, and that can be a success, and he can continue to develop, and right now he's pitching his fastball and his slider really well, if he can add the change in the curveball, man, that's going to be really fun. But it gives me more confidence in guys like Kirby and guys like Emerson Hancock, who are down the farm system, ready to come up in the next year or two.
One thing we've heard from a lot of guys in the Mariners front office is that they look to prospects and how they judge them, or one of the ways they judge them is how they bounce back from adversity. How do they handle adversity? And Logan Gilbert, his first couple starts at the big league level did not go great. Probably the worst starts of his professional career. Mm-hmm. And he has bounced back from that, or at least he's starting to. We've seen it in Cleveland. We saw it against the Angels last Sunday. This is a guy who has responded well to that tough start he got off to in his major league career. It's promising. Now, I mean, we're only six starts into his big league career. There's still plenty left of what could be Logan Gilbert, but early returns, not bad.
All right, what else we got here, Curtis?
Headlines.
Patriots cornerback and former defensive player of the year Stephon Gilmore did not show up to the Patriots mandatory minicamp. How are we rewriting this headline?
It means the annual tradition of the Seahawks giving up valuable draft capital for a veteran player is back in full effect. Happy Tradesmas. Let's hope this time he was born in the 90s.
Oh, so true.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll, I love the meme of Pete Carroll just by his computer. I think Josh Cashman, Cable Thanos out there for everybody who's on Twitter, he posts that one all the time of Pete Carroll just sitting there by his desk on a computer. And it just, they pop up different things. And
refreshing.
Seeing this headline of Stephon Gilmore not showing up's definitely got to be on his screen right now.
I'm excited to see the photoshops of Stephon Gilmore in full pads at SeaTac Airport.
One of my favorite jokes to see on Twitter. SeaTac Airport.
Now, although I agree that this is something that you have to keep an eye on, and this is definitely going to be something that peaks Pete Carroll and John Schneider's interest without question, I believe that they should be actively looking into this situation in terms of potential add because of the talent that Stephon Gilmore would bring. Brings great versatility, is a tremendous man-to-man coverage corner, and has tremendous instincts in zone coverage, would be aggressive. He would without a doubt upgrade your cornerback position as of now. The caveat to this is that he's 32 years old and he's looking to get paid. He's on the last year of his deal, and he wants to get paid. He wants a new contract. That, to me, is the only hang-up in this situation, because if you could get Stephon Gilmore, I would even give up a second-round pick in terms of might not be the long-term smart play, but in terms of going for it for a Super Bowl this year, I'd be willing to take a one-year shot at Stephon Gilmore. But if you're looking to give him an extension past that 32-year-old corner, no matter how talented, I don't know. I don't know how comfortable I feel about that.
Yeah, it turns out he was not born in the 90s. I mean, if there is a piece that's missing, if I have to point to a piece and say if they only have that, they can be a Super Bowl team, more confidence and more sureness in the cornerback position would be one of them. That group could be great, right? Like, the ceiling for these guys is fair is higher than I think the conversation about it is this offseason. Like, Akella Witherspoon's still a third-round pick, drafted before Shaq Griffin. You have Pierre Desir, who could have, like, a nice little resurgence there. DJ Reed was fantastic. I mean, he's solid. But, I mean, there's not a ton of tested veteran presence
right.
there. A lot of guys have very limited starting experience or extensive injury histories. And all of them, except for Ugo Amadi, who's a nickel, are on the final year of their deal.
Right.
So even though he's 32, having a long-term answer there could
potentially be good. Correction. I kept lumping him in with Julio Jones. He's 30. He's 30.
Yeah, be careful
30
there.
Going 31.
Okay, so,
that, so yeah. My bad on that.
You're jumping the gun
I
there.
I am jumping
he is
the gun.
A 90s baby.
Yes, he is a 90s baby, so he's 30 years old. But still, 30 years old, giving a big-time payday, a massive extension when you know you have DK and you've got Jamal Adams' deal, it's not something I would be adverse to. You got to go for it. But it's definitely something that makes you pause a little bit. You better hope that he is his bill of health is all clear.
Speaking of, Jake, we haven't talked about it yet, but last week you're 20s. Happening right now.
Yeah,
you have seven
Saturday.
Days. Saturday. Seven days left.
Saturday's the big day. It's my birthday, 30th birthday. Wow. Going to be living it up this week, Stacey. Going to be enjoying it. Yeah, Curtis, how's the water in the 30s?
It's not bad.
Not bad?
It's not bad. I mean, your back tends to seize up a little bit more.
Oh, come on. It didn't start all of a sudden.
You're right. My back was seizing up early on in my 20s.
27.
Yeah,
like, oh,
it wasn't just 30. So, I mean, there's, you know, it doesn't feel any different.
All right.
We are going to continue that Stephon Gilmore conversation, by the way, because I need to know how likely, how possible that trade is for the Seahawks. That's coming up at 45. Before we get to that, let's get back to Logan Gilbert, back to the Mariners with Mike Salk. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, getting to Mike Salk in a second. Jake, now before we bring Mike on, and I want to be able to ask him about Jamal Adams, we are going to be talking about Stephon Gilmore as a potential trade target for the Seahawks in a couple minutes. How are you feeling about the cornerback room as a whole right now? Be very honest, because I feel like I go back and forth between feeling like I'm being a little too harsh and then not giving them credit for what their ceiling could be.
For being a little too harsh, I don't think you could be too harsh in this situation. There's a lot of unproven. I mean, there's a difference between being excited about the talent and the potential and then also being realistic and looking at the proven commodity or lack thereof, right? That, to me, is where we sit at when it comes to the cornerback position.
All right, let's bring Mike Salk on now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. And you know what? Let's just start right there. Mike, Jake, and I were just talking about the cornerback room for Seattle. We're going to be talking about the potential for Stephon Gilmore as a trade target, but how are you feeling about this room as a whole right now? Confident, not confident, indifferent?
Well, I think I'm sort of mildly confident, but I don't have like the, hey, it's Richard Sherman back there and they're going to come up with 100 picks. I mean, you know, I would love a Stephon Gilmore, quite frankly. As much as I wasn't necessarily into the Julio Jones idea, I'm significantly more in favor of going for broke with a cornerback because I think you got to try to shore up a defense that allows everything to kind of function better. I like their cornerback group, but I just don't see them taking the ball away enough. And ultimately, how do you win in football? What's the biggest indicator of success? Takeaways. It's your turnover differential. So anything they can do to improve that, to me, is worth it. And so, yeah, I'd absolutely be looking at Gilmore.
You know, Salk, the other thing with Gilmore that we have to consider and we have to factor in is the fact that he wants to get paid. He's on the last year of his contract. He has been severely underpaid compared to his play. The Patriots won in that contract negotiation, and he wants to make his money. He's 30 years old. That is going to be something that coincides with trading for a guy like that. Does that give you any hesitancy whatsoever?
Yeah, plenty. I mean, I don't know whether you're ever going to end up signing him. There's only so many guys you can spend your money on. But, you know, it at least gives you the opportunity, right? I mean, you sort of have this idea of going for it this year. Julio was going to provide the same kind of problem, right? It's not like you were going to have him for the next, you know, while, and he wasn't going to want to get paid. He's shown over the course of his career that he consistently wants to get paid to keep up with the market. So, look, it's the same risk factor, but I think you've got to, at the very least, kick the tires and hope that there's a deal to be made where you don't have to give up too much.
Salk, another player who certainly wants to get paid, Jamal Adams. Is there a number you wouldn't surpass when it comes to his new deal in terms of average yearly value?
I don't know that I'm the right person to answer numbers like that, Stacey. I mean, I continue to think the whole NFL system of paying people by their position only is ridiculous. You pay guys based on what you think they're worth to your football team. You traded for Jamal Adams. You gave two first-round picks, sacrificed two drafts in order to do it. And what you like about him is not just his ability to play safety, but his ability to play all over the field in the modern NFL game, to cover tight ends, to rush the passer, and to be a leader of your defense. So what is that worth to you? Well, a lot of that, to me, is going to come back to the same conversation we had last year, which is, how long is Bobby Wagner a part of this team? Is he a guy that is going to be a long-term piece for you? You spent a lot of money on him, and you know, I said it last year, I said it the year before. You got something out of Bobby Wagner, but it wasn't highest paid linebacker in the league kind of value. So I think all those things have to factor into your decision on how much you want to pay for Jamal Adams.
And when you factor all that in, Salk, at the end of the day, where do you think that this thing's going to come down to? Doesn't necessarily need to be exact numbers, but do you think it's going to be above or below Bobby?
I think it probably is below Bobby, but I do think it is probably at the very high end of what people have ever paid for a safety because of his ability to play more than safety. Like, I understand Jamal Adams' argument. Like, dude, you want to pay me like a safety? I led the team in sacks last year. We all know what the defensive end market is. Now, I'm not a defensive end, but I sure come up with sacks like one. Yeah, I don't know whether he'll surpass Bobby, but I absolutely see him right at the top of the safety market.
How have you been making of Jake Fraley's weekend, and where do you think he fits into the Mariners' bigger plans? It's been kind of surprising.
It's such a good question. Gosh, I can't watch him without seeing Johnny Damon. And, you know, obviously they're not exactly the same player. Damon's just the ability to run and all that, especially in the early years, hitting the ball to all fields, getting on base that way. But when you factor in the eye that he has and his ability to get on base via the walk, and something about the way that the barrel just drops onto the low inside pitch is just very Johnny Damon-like. Combine it with the long hair and kind of the caveman persona. You know, he's got a better arm, and obviously he doesn't have nearly the same kind of success yet in the big leagues, but that's a player you can work with, right? I mean, I don't know where he ends up playing, and maybe when it's all said and done, he's your fourth outfielder, but he's protection for the fact that Kyle Lewis has an injury history. He's protection for the fact that you haven't gotten anything yet from your potential superstar in Kelnick. He's protection for Mitch Haniger, who's consistently on the IL or injured. I mean, you know, that's a really valuable piece to have. Don't know that he's a star, but absolutely a player that can be a contributor for you.
Now, with Jake Fraley, you walk down some of those names and how on paper it looks like, oh gosh, this could be a really crowded outfield. How are you going to make all this work? But I think as we've seen over the course of this year, you see Haniger, you see Kelnick come up, come down. You see Kyle Lewis suffer that injury. You see Taylor Trammell come up, come down. If Fraley can establish himself as a somewhat of a proven commodity, I mean, that to me has to be something that you roll with the hot hand, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely 100%. And especially right now where you're just trying to figure out what each of these guys have. Nothing is guaranteed to anybody other than a shot, right? You're going to absolutely guarantee Kelnick an opportunity to come back and get it done. You're going to guarantee that Taylor Trammell has his opportunities because of the kind of prospect he is. But I think Jake Fraley is at the very least worthy of a guarantee of some opportunity. And if he's going to make the most of it, you know, look, at the end, one of the small hidden messages in Moneyball, if you go back and read it, is not to ignore success, right, based on potential. And Billy Beane, who's obviously the focus of that book, you know, he had all the potential in the world as a prospect. He's a top prospect in baseball and got all kinds of opportunities, never got it done. And one of the guys he talks about in there is Chad Bradford, who was a side-arming right-hander, and he just did well everywhere he went. He didn't look good. Nobody liked the potential. Nobody thought he would ever amount to anything because he didn't throw hard, but he got results. And one of the takeaways from Moneyball, in addition to everything you read about, you know, on base percentage and statistical revolution, is don't ignore actual success on the field. And if Jake Fraley's having it right now, absolutely he deserves the opportunity to continue it.
It sure was heartbreaking, though, to see Mitch Haniger get hurt, and obviously good news that he's day-to-day. I mean, what's your immediate kind of reaction to that? Is it relief that he's day-to-day? Is it fear that that injury might linger? How are you feeling about it?
That's a lower body injury, so my fear factor will be a lot lower with Mitch Haniger. That guy's just got terrible luck.
Yeah,
I mean, if he was consistently pulling hamstrings and everything else, you'd be like, all right, hey, man, you better do a little different workout or whatever it is. But it's not that. He gets hit by things. He crashes into things. It's contusions and breaks and, you know, things that, gosh, I think most guys never even want to think about. So, yeah, I don't know that I can fault Mitch for anything that's gone wrong. But at some point, it does become your history that you're just not available as much as you want to be. And, yeah, I'm encouraged by the fact that he's day-to-day. I don't think this will be serious. Lower, you know, if it's a hand or a wrist, finger, those types of things tend to last for a lot longer. But I, you know, it's obviously not great to see your best player back on the IL or back injured, maybe not in the IL.
All right, we are out of time for right now, but I got to talk to you about Justice Sheffield when you join us tomorrow, Mike.
Oh, I hope that there's something good to say at some point. I loved what I saw from Gilbert yesterday. Want to see a lot more of that. A lot more swings and misses. Fastball wasn't right in the middle of the plate, exactly what he needed to do.
Maybe we'll challenge you to like a scouting report to obviously have stuff you're ready with what's been disappointing you, but find one thing to give fans hope. Maybe that's your scouting report until we talk to you tomorrow about Justice Sheffield.
For Justice Sheffield.
For Justice. You can do it. You can do it. I believe in you.
That's a tough task.
All right. And I'll have a lot of Marco stuff because I'm going to the game tonight.
Perfect. That's fantastic. All right. We'll talk to you about pitching then. All right. Bye, Mike. All right. Stephon Gilmore has not shown up to Pat's minicamp. Is he a possible trade target for the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners return home for a 9-game homestand starting tonight against the Minnesota Twins. Marco Gonzalez gets the start. Pregame begins at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Jake, Stephon Gilmore has not shown up to Pat's minicamp. Mandatory minicamp. He's supposed to be there. Decided not to. Is it possible he's a trade target for the Seahawks? Now, we had Brady Henderson, who I believe said this on with Wyman and Bob a while ago, that he could see the Seahawks saving money for a move at corner, but that Gilmore may be too expensive. So let's take a step back before we look forward at a trade for Gilmore or another position and just look at the team as a whole. When it comes to defense, you're looking at defense and you're talking about missing pieces. This cornerback room does give you some reason for concern. You have Akello Witherspoon, who was up and down with San Francisco, at times looked fantastic, particularly in his first season. It's what made him a third-round pick coming out of Colorado. Other times looked not so great, including a time in the postseason when he was benched because he performed so poorly for Kyle Shanahan. You also have DJ Reed out there, who's been phenomenal, doesn't have extensive starting experience. Really, the most games he has starting were last year for you, and he entered the season for you in week 8
right
against San Francisco. So he also has limited experience. You have Trey Flowers, veteran corners, kind of being overlooked, but in part because he never solidified himself as a full-time top-tier starter. He was always kind of competing with Quentin Dunbar last year. And then you've got some guys just kind of in there vying for time, vying for a starting job there. So yeah, going from a time when you had a lockdown corner and Richard Sherman, and then even in Shaq's first year, like really solid production on the other side, to you're not quite sure who's starting for you, is a big jump for a lot of Seahawks fans to make. And it's, I think, a fair cause for concern for a team that, even though they improved in the second half of the season, struggled mightily against the pass last year.
Right. It is something that is a concern, and there's no doubt. Anytime you see something like Stephon Gilmore, that caliber of player, who potentially might have a serious rift with his team, and there's a possibility of him being traded. There was a big rumor going around that there was a serious possibility of him being traded last year at the trade deadline with New England. So this isn't new territory that we're walking on. I think it's just heating up and becoming more serious, and you bet your bottom dollar that Pete Carroll and John Schneider are paying very, very close attention to this. But I at some point, you are going to have a position group that you're rolling the dice with, in a sense. And you're going to have a position group that is going to be less, I guess, less value. There's going to be less money and resources put into a particular position group. It's just the way that NFL cap, it puts you in that position where you have to pick and choose.
Parity.
Exactly. It's built for parity, but you have to pick and choose and strategically choose where you're going to invest your money, where you're trying to where you're going to try to be young and where you're also going to try an experiment with competition. And with the Seahawks this year, very clearly, as of right now, that position is cornerback. And that doesn't necessarily scare me. It just is not a it's not a position that I can look at and say, nope, that's going to be for sure checked off. Don't have to worry about that position. We are going to have to wait and see how that position group performs. But if you want to talk about game-changing, impact-changing type of play and the addition where I still believe they need to make, I don't think it's corner. I wouldn't be mad at bringing in somebody like Stephon Gilmore, not in the slightest. I'd be very excited about that. But I do believe that everybody is overlooking this defensive line group. And adding a key piece to that, like a Hakeem Hicks from the Chicago Bears, or you could put out there a number of different players like that across the league, I would much rather try to trade for somebody like that that can be a true disruptor in the interior of your defensive line. They've already added to their edge rushers. You already have Daryl Taylor. You already have Benson Mayoa, Kerry Hyder Jr., and Carlos Dunlap. That's who you're riding with in terms of your edge rush. But in terms of that interior portion of your defensive line, they are really thin. And I think everyone's overlooking the fact that Jaron Reed left and is now with Kansas City. That is an unfortunate misstep in your offseason where you could have had great depth. And the reason why that's important is you can never have too many of those guys that are stout in the run game, but also that can be disruptive in the passing game. When you had Puna Ford, you had Jaron Reed getting after it in the interior pass rush, that was great to add along with everything else that you were doing. Now you only have one guy in Puna Ford that can really truly get to the passer, and that is a spot that they are hurting it currently at right now. And I think that that can't be overstated, overlooked, because if you can get to the passer, if you can be disruptive at the line of scrimmage, that's where great defenses are won. Yes, you can have great defenses built from the back forward, but not often. Last year with Tampa Bay, as great as the secondary performed for Tampa Bay, main reason why, pass rush, disruptive play for their defensive line. The Legion of Boom, everybody focuses on that group in the secondary. As great as they were so dominant up front, which made the job of the secondary that much easier. If you're worried about a position group at the cornerback position right now, Stacey, with DJ Reed, Akilah Witherspoon, Pierre Desir, Trey Flowers, Trey Brown, a bunch of unproven guys along the way that you don't know what you're going to get out of them, you know how you could help them? It's not just by adding somebody like Stephon Gilmore, but upgrading and improving your defensive line and add that disruption up front. That makes everybody better on the back end.
I agree with you that people are overlooking the need on the defensive line. I'm kind of charting out the additions they've made, who they paid. I mean, there's a chance that all four starters, let's say it's Hyder, Ford, Woods, and Dunlap, are guys that they would have brought in free agency or extended. So invested money in every single one of those starters, and then you brought back Mayoa, who kind of swaps in and out with Dunlap, so you also paid him. The loss of Jaron Reed, I think that because he never reached, once again, that 10.5 sack total he had, I think people are overlooking, you know, what his loss could be. Because he reached this amazing, you know, sky-high potential for what he could do from the interior, and it was with Frank Clark there with him. Frank Clark leaves. He's not able to replicate that, in part because they don't really have any great defensive ends filling in. It's not like you went from Frank Clark to someone else who was great. You went from Frank Clark to you guys are like 29th or 30th in sack totals.
Right.
And Jaron Reed's your best lineman, and he needs some help. So without him, yes, they did invest a lot of money in trying to figure that line out, but there are question marks still. I mean, I'll leave Ford out of it, who's been solid for you, but there are still question marks with a lot of these guys, whether or not they can do that for you. You've got Adams, who can help with your pass rush. You have Taylor, who's going to be presumably your Sam backer, so he can be there too. But I guess what I wonder is, do you then, say, make a trade and acquire a defensive lineman? Would you go interior, prioritizing interior linemen?
I would prioritize interior as of right now, okay, because you feel confident about the additions that you made at the edge right now. The other one that we forget about is Aldon Smith. We have no idea what's going on with that situation. They've held on to him, mm-hmm, which makes me believe that they feel very confident that it will go favorably for him when it comes to his court proceedings. But still, I mean, that's still a scary situation right now.
I mean, they have put a lot of money. So they paid or re-signed Hyder, Ford, Woods, Dunlap, Mayoa, Smith, should he come in here, and then some additional pieces there. I guess what I worry is that I worry the gap between what you can do on the back end still isn't good enough. That even having a great pass rush, you still need like a quality, baseline quality cornerback group. Because a good quarterback, and they play a few of them this year,
right,
is still going to find time. And don't forget, they're still going to be playing some really solid offensive lines.
They will. They could be. We just don't know yet. There a lot of unproven commodities. You're 100% right to point that out. We just don't know who these guys are going to be. And sometimes, Stacey, you have to roll the dice. You have to let competition play out if you feel confident about the upside of every single one of these guys, which I think they do.
All right, a ton of Mariners news from the weekend, starting with which performance on the road trip left you more excited, Jake Fraley or Logan Gilbert. We have an update for Mitch Haniger. Taking a look at what J.P. Crawford's been able to do defensively, plus, and a question submitted from Curtis Rogers, why do we continue to run out Rafael Montero? These two are ready to sound off. Mariners potpourri coming your way next.